And so now the opposition in Tanzania, does it make the government as nervous as the Kenyan one? Because you know the Kenyan one, we know the opposition has won an election and the election was taken away from them. What's the situation in Tanzania? Because the next thing that I wanted to ask was like, we see you in the protests like last week. So the question is, after all this time, did you end up becoming also a Kenyan citizen? Or is there a dual Kenyan, Tanzanian, or what happens?
No, we don't have. So,
yeah, or you're so, just
I mean, it's not, look, I mean, even then, you know, so we Kenya allows for dual citizenship.
Yeah,
Tanzania
yeah.
doesn't. I mean, so you don't have. But I have a very interesting, you know, view when it comes to these borders and
yeah,
that
yeah.
we have created.
Mm.
I one of the things that I always look at is like number one. I think I was born human.
Okay.
And then. Second, I think I was born African
yeah.
by the fact of my skin.
Yeah.
And I think third, I'm Tanzanian in
yes.
that sense.
Mm.
But, I mean, these borders that we also, that we refer ourselves to, they were not created by
us.
Us, our ancestors, our forefathers, whatever, these were colonial borders.
Yeah.
And I think so. I always take them with a
pinch of salt.
Pinch of salt. I always look at them and they should not also divide us to an extent whereby, you know, you are the other and I'm the other. And I think over the years I've seen that.
Mm.
You know that you know this happening, and so I've always avoided that, and I've always actually looked at that from that perspective. That okay, you know, and this idea that I'm this and I'm that, it is fine, but it should not actually cloud us. That you know that it bring these bridges that I've seen that you know happening. You know. Throughout the world where you know even here as we have the East African Federation, you know you have this you cannot work here, you cannot have this here, you cannot do this here, you are this and you are that. I think I don't prescribe to that. Okay.
makes sense because talking of Tanzania, I have to ask, when you left Nation, like one of the things that when Nation did not renew your contract, there were two versions of the story. One story was it's because you'd drawn Kikwete.
Mm.
Another one was because of Uhuru Kenyatta.
Mm.
So what was the reason?
No, it was a little bit of both, but largely, yeah, so I did a very, you know, a controversial drawing that had the East African band in Tanzania for almost a year, which did cost the Nation a lot of money. But at the same time, there was a lot of pressure from the Uhuru Ruto government.
Okay.
You know, the press was having a lot of, and there were, you know, quite a number of characters that were very undesirable as far as they were concerned.
Yeah,
and so they were targets. So there a lot of pressure was from here. Rather that okay, you know, and about my work and what I do, because you can remember during the whole ICC saga, would draw them with you know those iron balls and
I remember that.
I don't think they were very happy about
written ICC
and,
yes
and yeah, so I think they that put a lot of pressure on the press and not only Nation, I think lots the media houses in general. And so that what happened, and so I became, you know, partly, you know, a victim of that, whereby they had to figure out, you know, how to how do we sort out this issue?
So with the East African drawing, it's you draw Kikwete and then the next thing is you people cannot sell newspapers in Tanzania anymore.
Well, they I think that was, by the way, it was even public. I mean, that drawing, the government reacted, was very unhappy with it, and they said, well, they used some subterfuges to say, you have demeaned the president and things like that to ban the newspaper from the East African from being
sold in Tanzania.
So
Because if you had to ask me, I thought Kikwete was more in quotes stronger than Magufuli, because I felt like Magufuli would be. So did you ever draw Magufuli, and was sold in Tanzania?
No. I don't think there's a president that I've never drawn.
For Tanzania, because of course Tanzania, for Kenya, yes.
Yeah, they've all. I've drawn
Magufuli. Because I knew you used to draw him with this big forehead.
I've drawn him terribly as I did with Kikwete. But of course he was a different character anyway. And of course he was much more dictatorial than Kikwete. I mean, I called Magufuli. I mean, there's a politician who carved this slogan, dictator uchwara, basically a petty dictator. I remember drawing him in, like that in one of my drawings. I think, dictators, authoritarian leaders don't like to be
be humanized.
And basically editorial cartoonists that kid that tells the emperor you have no clothes. And I think they don't like that, that goes way back. And so, that's one role of editorial cartoonists, is to speak truth to power.
Yeah.
And again, some of us have been very lucky. I mean, it hasn't been that lucky for some of my colleagues, if you are to go back in history. I mean, the editorial cartoonists that have been killed.
Danish one was killed, or they attacked
Charlie Hebdo case. Yeah, and one of those cartoonists, Bernard Verlac, that was a friend. Somebody who actually visited Kenya twice. We even had workshops here. At Nairobi, at Alliance Francaise. And he was killed by, these religious fundamentalists who... And so, and even before that, you had cases of cartoonists being actually killed and threatened and jailed and suffering and so forth. So, it is something that one has to be aware of, as long as you do this job.
Because even with what I was trying to understand is the East African is banned during Kikwete's time. By the time Magufuli is becoming president, the license had been renewed. Now you could operate in Tanzania.
So the East African.
Yes, the East African. So there was not that fear that, since this guy is more dictatorial, let's just avoid drawing him. There was not that fear. It was just, let's operate like whatever had happened before didn't happen.
No. I mean, there were still, even in Tanzania, there were lots of, quite a number of brave cartoonists who have done also very, tough drawings on Magufuli, even during his time. I mean, it should be remembered that. So I did quite probably also a number of drawings on him, but I think mine, coming from this side of town, it was a little bit easier, I suppose. And I don't think Magufuli and his people probably cared much about that. Okay. I think they still, you know, probably didn't like that, but probably they didn't, you know. So you still have that, even today, that, you know, we do. I mean, I've done, you know, a number of drawings on Samia. And,
Because we'll get to Samia. We'll get to Samia. I just wanted to understand. Now, when you're drawing Magufuli, all these Tundu Lissu shootings are happening. Did you still just visit Tanzania without any fear? Because you know he was known to be petty.
I've always gone, visited my my folks, and you know, kind of I go there. So when I go there, I don't do drawing. So, but the interesting thing is sometimes even you know, when I remember a few times at the airport, Dar airport. I mean, I remember, I think one of the immigration officers stamping my passport and said, you know, welcome home, Gado. You know, it's like, I didn't know that, you know. So it's, but I think, you know, all has been well so far.
And your dad was, is he ever worried? Like sometimes, because you'll draw something. Because I know our fathers, the older generation is always worried. They always don't want to, you know, like rattle any cage. They just want someone to play safe. So they're not worried that
my mom was worried at one point, and I think she's at one point she had a talk with me that she was very concerned, and then she expressed that, okay, I got to be careful, and you know, and so forth, and so that's the one time I remember that I, you know, she was very worried. It was actually during that Kikwete issue, you know, we had a chat with her, and she was concerned. Yes,
because now, yes, talking of Samia, interesting things have happened around her. You drew the cartoon where when they said they wanted to put her on money, and is that still being considered?
I don't know. I mean, you never know with politicians. I mean, they're, you know. So, I've done some tough stuff on her.
Yeah, yeah.
I think when we had the so-called in quotes the sale of
the was it a
port?
Yes, yes.
You know, end of quotes. It's all those you know, I've done. And the Loliondo massacres with you know, the selling of land in Loliondo, whereby you know, I've done, you know, some tough stuff on her, and I think of
So because how would you rate the democracy there? Because I feel like Kenya is miles ahead. Like
it is very true. I mean, the no doubt about that. In terms of the, the democratic liberties and democratic, you know, rights, the democratic institutions, and so forth. Yes, I think there is no doubt about that. If you are to look at, you also have to start with, for example, the Constitution of Kenya, you know, which is with all its faults and challenges, but since 2010 to date, you can see, you know, a lot of gains and that, you know, Kenya as a country has gained. I mean, the very the very protests that are happening now is a result of actually that very defending those very civil liberties and so forth, and that is completely different with what is in Tanzania, whereby they are now, you know, talking of actually of a new constitution.
Yeah.
And you have, as usual, resistance from the government.
Yeah, yeah.
And because, yes, the government of the day is the beneficiary of that. And, of course, at the end of, at the same time, they... they are afraid to lose power, and so it's a challenge that you know, that we Tanzanians had to,
okay,
you know, have to sort out.
Mm.
There is no other way.
We yeah,
have
yeah.
to. It's Tanzanians who actually have to deal with that issue.
Mm.
There is no doubt that a new constitution is needed, and mm. it's coming. There is no way that you
can. What would need to change in that constitution? What do you feel like it's in their constitution that's not, is in the Tanzanian constitution that's or lacks there, that's in Kenya? Like what needs to change? Because with most of these things, I always feel like it's just the leadership that's sensitive. Or do you feel like there's something that needs to
no,
be?
No, everything needs to change. I mean, mm. a lot of things needs to change. There's no doubt about it. I mean, mm. it's draconian and outdated president, and that's why people like President Magufuli
mm.
had to do all manners of things, mm. You know, because they were not, in fact, they were not necessarily, they used a very draconian
yeah.
Constitution to do all manners of things. The president, yeah. for example, is the powers of the president.
Yeah.
The president with the Tanzanian constitution is a demigod. I mean, he can decide all manner of things. He appoints all manners of things.
Mm.
And that is a problem.
Mm.
He is the one who would appoint, you know, district, you know, regional commissioners, all mm. these people,
mm.
You know, regional directors and so forth and things like that. But, you know, and then it gives also you know powers to do all manners of things
mm-hmm.
and so mm-hmm. but it's different here that the presidential yeah, powers are very limited
yeah,
and
yeah.
we have seen what that means mm. And so that has to change, that has to be decided in mm. There's a huge discussion now in okay. Tanzania about mm. All these issues and what needs to be done. Tanzania is going to an election next year.
Mm.
And so there is no doubt. I don't think that will happen before next elections.
Okay.
But, you know, for sure, that has to happen, and it has to happen soon.
Okay.
You know, otherwise, you know, you are going to have, these issues and now again and again. And I think also one of the things is that you must have a constitution that also is progressive. It has to deal with the issues of the day. You have is also a constitution that is incapable of actually mitigating the societal changes that are happening, the technological changes that are happening, you have a constitution that cannot address basically the issues of the day. It yes. cannot address them, and so that also has to change. That's okay. the reality of it. Forget about the political talk that is there, but you have a constitution that cannot address the issues of the day, cannot deal with the issues of the day.
Mm.
Yeah, and that has to change.
Because even like talking of Suluhu, there was this article that came out yesterday. So it was Tanzanian artist arrested for insulting President Suluhu and burning her picture. You know, this Kenya, this is an issue. Like even if we had to go back to what I was talking about, the puppet being slapped.
Yeah, so like, that's how far, you know, Tanzania is. So you have to give us some time.
Yeah, I know.
We are catching up with you. But
yeah. yeah. But what about Tanzanian politicians? Are they as rich as the Kenyan counterparts? Because I feel like from the outside looking in, Magufuli fought corruption. I don't know how true that is. That's what I'm asking.
No, that is contestable. I mean, you know, fighting corruption does not necessarily just coming out and making noise about corruption. I mean, it's a much bigger fight.
Mm.
I think Magufuli had good intentions,
yeah.
I believe, but you know, the road to hell is paved with you know, all manners of good intentions. So I think I don't. You need more than just one man to fight
corruption.
You need to change institutions. You need to change culture. You need to involve, you know, the public. And it's also a long-term goal. I think that's very important. It's not something that you can actually just do it, you know, to tomorrow.
Yeah.
So I think that is also important, and that's why we're talking about, you know, having a new constitution. I mean, in Kenya, you know, the people, you know, even with the new constitution, you know, people are fighting. You know, you know, you have massive corruption.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying the new, of course, you know, the new constitution is not, you know, you are.
There's just not the goodwill to fight corruption.
Exactly.
Not
so there has to be goodwill there. You have to change the culture, and also you have also to empower the public and so forth. So all these things are some of the things that you know, the political leadership has to accept and do. And so, but I think if anything is to go by, I think the young people, you know, in Kenya have shown that there is hope.
Yeah.
And yes, and actually this is a long journey, but there is hope. Yeah.
And there's this story, I don't know if I followed up on it, during Magufuli's time, was it the head of TRA that had been thrown to prison or something? Was it the head of the Tanzania Revenue Authority? Was it that? Who was there?
No, he threw quite a number of people in prison, unfairly, majority of them unfairly.
Okay.
You know, because you can't actually just throw people in jail. You must actually bring them to, you have to bring them to court to bring them to jail. You cannot actually just grab people and then just, you know, throw them into jail. And I think during his time, that's what
used to happen.
What happened? You know, he, you know, just, you know, he threw a lot of people in jail. He sacked a lot of people, and because of actually, again, as we say, having too much
power.
Exactly, presidential. You know, powers, presidential intimidation, presidential. You know, so he, but you know. Running a country has to be more than that.
Yeah,
I think has, you know, and that's what we are talking about. We're talking about you know, having a new constitution that reflects the will of the people.
Oh, okay. And so now the opposition in Tanzania, does it make the government as nervous as the Kenyan one? Because, you know, the Kenyan one, we know the opposition has won an election, and the election was taken away from them. What's the situation in Tanzania? Is it just that they always lose, or is it the same thing? They win, it's taken away from them, but then Tanzanians don't have that Kenyan spirit of the streets. Let's go to the streets.
So one also has to understand. I mean, we have said before, I mean, you'll have to also to look at the historical context here. You know, Tanzania comes from a very different background in terms of its history and so forth. However, you cannot actually, if you are to be fair to the opposition, is that you cannot actually have free and you cannot say for a fact that, you know, these elections, you know, for example, the previous elections in Tanzania outrightly that the you know, CCM won. Because these elections were not necessarily free and fair.
I remember.
You don't have a fair, it's not a fair fight. So we have also to give credit to the opposition for even actually,
you trying.
Know, even up to today, they are still there. I mean, you have, the fact of the matter is that, you know, it was never a fair fight. You have the an electoral body that is actually
compromised.
It is actually, you know, you have the government setting the agenda. You have the government banning the opposition. You have all manners of things. It's simply just like, you know, Kenya in the
90s,
80s and 90s.
Yes.
And so if you start from that, then how can you say actually the government has won an election?
Okay.
I mean, so we have also to look at it from that from that perspective. That you know, to begin with.
How many seats were there in parliament? Because I remember I had during this last election where Magufuli was still alive, the opposition won like 2 seats only out of a very
I think there were controversies because there were MPs that basically, you know, crossed over. But how do you cross over when actually you are elected on a different ticket?
Mm.
So those are the kind of things that you know. You also need, for example, you don't have, there are people who have questioned the independence of judiciary in Tanzania. Mm. You people have questioned the independence of certain institutions.
Mm.
All these issues are important. I mean, in Kenya, we have seen the fight to emasculate the judiciary.
Yes,
we have seen how that, you know, how, you know, how the independence of judiciary is important, and other institutions. I mean, and so forth. I mean, these are very important issues that also, you know. So, for example, you also need these issues discussed in Tanzania, and of course, even in Uganda. Because it's only when you have independent institutions, then you are going to see democracy functioning.
Yeah.
It's only when you have proper rule of law when you see these things. But you need to have, for example, the way the head of these institutions are appointed. And so it's a long journey.
Yeah,
and I think some of this you are trying to, the fruits of this. Even in Kenya, it's only now that we are seeing the fruits of some of this.
But also Kenya, there are points where we are moving backwards, because I think, I don't know who pointed this out. They pointed out, I don't know if it was Mohamed Welie, he pointed out that the legislature in Moi's era was much more functional than the legislature in William Ruto's time, because that time people would question Moi in parliament. Right now we have a situation whereby anything that Ruto says goes. See, so I feel also like Kenya is still, we are getting there, but we have that.
Yes, it's always a back and forth. I mean, the route is always, it's always many things. So it's back and forth, it's meandering, it's zigzagging, and so forth. And you're right, if you have to look at the quality of members of parliament here, it's shameful. There is no other word. It's just shameful to look at what members of parliament actually. I mean, these are members of parliament who actually, passed a finance bill, and then the very next day they were, despite protests, and then the very next day they were clapping on the president, said, "Okay, we have to drop this."
I mean, what
was that?
Psychopath.
So exactly. Mm. So if you look at the quality of MPs we have, these are people who are actually, how do you describe them? These are, you know,
spineless.
Not only spineless, but there are people who actually have no clue of actually what is your role as an MP.
Why are you an MP?
Why were you elected? You have people who have no clue, none whatsoever.
Yeah.
So it's a challenge, and you can argue that, well, the people themselves put them there. But the people have woken up again and said, okay, no more. So it's again, as you said, it's a long journey. But again, the people have shown that there is hope. There is hope.
And looking at East Africa, how bad is Uganda? If you're to, because I feel like Tanzania is better than Uganda, or what would you feel? Because when it comes to democracy wise, Kenya will always be at the top because of freedom of expression. The democracy might be questionable, because in Kenya also the incumbent always wins, except the one situation whereby we got rid of Moi. But since then, 2007, I always say that history will judge Kibaki harshly because of 2007. Mm. So, and then after that, we came to the realization that the incumbent always wins. If even right now, even with the amount of unpopularity that Ruto has, they still that thing in our minds that can an incumbent actually lose. But now when we look at Uganda, we are like, damn, we are miles ahead. And I feel like even Tanzania would feel like Uganda is in the medieval ages of democracy. How would you put it?
Well, it's difficult to, you know, to have, you know, I don't know, you know, to have an index on, you know, we need to have an East African index on that.
Yeah.
But sure, yeah, Uganda, they are in much deeper trouble, if you had to ask me from my perspective.
Mm.
And yeah, because you can even argue that, you know, basically, you know, you have the army ruling over Uganda, I mean, mm-hmm. you know, in many respect.
Yeah.
And it's a difficult one to argue where, you know, it was the, you know, what direction Uganda is taking. And I remember a very good friend of mine who actually told me many, many years ago, he said, okay, you know, Museveni will not leave power. Mm. It's only when he dies that he...
Yes, yeah.
Or he said, well, you know, if he's removed violently. And I disagreed with him. And, but I look back, I very much agree with him.
Yeah.
You know, that, yeah, I think you have... a president that is actually is not going to leave
power
there.
Literally over his dead body. Yeah,
exactly. Mm. And he has actually said as much, you know, in many occasions.
Mm.
But also you have to look at, you know, we were talking about, you know, other things and you know, you have to look at the constitution of democracy as a whole. And you see that, okay, well, probably, you know, yes, Uganda is way behind. But the good thing is that, you know, for me, is that in all these countries is that you have movements, you have people pushing, you have organizations that are working pretty hard to make sure that things are happening. You have individuals that have actually risked their lives, and they are to do, as Gen Z would say, to do the Lord's work. In many respects, that gives me hope. Gives me hope in the region that you know, it's not like even in countries like Uganda and Tanzania, I think there is plenty of hope.
Yeah,
I see that all the time. I mean, I, you know, if you have to look at the opposition in Tanzania and what is happening, that gives me hope that you know, going forward, I think there is bound to be change. I mean, there is no other way. I mean, even in Uganda, there is no other way. You can look at it.
Okay, because even like when you are talking about Uganda, and you made me remember Bobi Wine and Besigye, it showed me there's a worse country, and that country, I don't know if you visited it, but Rwanda. Rwanda, because I feel like Rwanda now there's no hope. This is also a president who will have to just leave power when he's dead, or?
Yes, so it's very, Rwanda is also very interesting. It's a very interesting
democracy, in quotes.
Well, no. it's probably the completely the on the other side.
Yes,
you know, probably.
Mm.
And yes, we can look at its history and what happened and all that.
Mm.
At the end of the day, the question still remains, what happens when Kagame leaves? I mean, so there has to be also, you know, what will happen? And I think that is actually the bigger problem they're also having, or the country also is having. Yes, you have all these other things happening, but at the end of the day, you have, and probably they have their worst record, you know, if you look at the treatment of the journalists, if you have to look at the
when the opposition girl, she's Diane Rwigara or something.
The opposition treatment and so forth. Mm. Of course, you have all these good, very good image that is portrayed, and the things that have happened, and the and which is all right and fine, but at the end of the day, also the it is also the bigger question is that what is it, what will happen when Kagame leaves? And it's important also to really it's also important to remember that, I mean, Rwanda is also part and parcel. Yeah, that's nice.
This is
Rwanda is also part and parcel of the East African community, right?
Mm.
And so, as a community, how are we going to work out this stuff? You have Kenya, where it is actually, you know, way ahead. You have Tanzania following. You have all these other countries. So, how are we going to mitigate that if we are actually going, we are going to build a much stronger East African Federation.
Yeah.
If we have actually our politics so disjointed.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is the question also that is always being avoided. And and I think politicians would always run around and say, oh, you know, each country must do its own thing and all that. But I don't agree to that. I think the region has to be, all these countries in the region have to be in step.
Yeah, they have to have some.
Exactly. And in, if we are actually to progress politically, economically, and so forth. So that is a question also, I think, that we need to look at.
Because talking of that, we have now the 2027 elections coming up in Kenya. What do you feel, considering that there might not be a Raila on the ballot? What do you think will happen? Like, after having studied Kenyan politics, do you feel like someone like Kalonzo stands a chance against Ruto, especially considering this whole Gen Z movement?
Well, I don't know. I mean, that is actually, I don't know. It's not for me to say. I think... as a satirist, I think, well, it's always sad to see some characters, you know, fading away. But we will always get new characters. But I think at some point, you know, all these politicians will have to leave the stage at some, you know, at some point. I don't think that worries me that much, or, you know, it shouldn't be a concern. I think somebody will show up. We don't know who at some point, and I think that is after covering politics for that long. I think I'm not really worried about you know, so and so being there and so and so not being there. I mean, Raila has been on stage for all these years, and he has done what he has. He has done, and just like the Gen Z movement, hopefully there will be other new
players,
crop of you know, leaders that will actually take up the fight.
Okay.
Yeah.
The probability of a Senegal thing? No. Like a young person who campaigns for a very short time.
We'll have to see. I mean, I don't really know. We'll have to see, because is, I mean, this is, you know, hopefully, you know, you'll have a few new faces. I mean, Kenyan politics is very different. And but what this, you, if you look at it this way, you are going to have a whole crop of new voters.
Yeah.
Who actually, you know, they are
much more informed.
They are informed.
Yeah.
They are very informed, if you are to tell me, if you are to ask me. And you know, who they will decide to put in power is anybody's guess.
Yeah.
I mean, yes, that you know, we don't know yet, but we'll have definitely you know, these are momentous and very exciting times in Kenya, so to speak.
Yeah. Okay, and then let's rewind again and go back to you're studying architecture and you just leave it. Do you miss it? Do you sometimes feel like, you know what, yes, my life turned out perfectly, but still I'd have wanted to draw a few houses.
I didn't get very much deep into it. I read a lot about architecture. I did promise my parents that I will go back to finish my course. And I'm still, you know, working on that, by the way. But I've gone on to study, you know, film and animation.
Yeah.
So I don't have regrets, to be honest. As I said, I'm also very somebody who enjoys, reading broadly about so many other subjects and so forth. And so I enjoy that, yeah.
Mm. So the Italy thing, how did this happen? Fabrica, was it Nation that pushed you to go and get that, or did you just apply by yourself and then?
No, it was just by myself. It was they through the Italian Culture Center here, they did announce, and it was actually a very fascinating school. They kind of just were going around the world to pick up individuals and people who were interested to join the institutions and to study and to do interesting projects. And so I just applied and I ended up spending a year studying in Italy, and then I got back after I actually took a sabbatical, leave without pay.
Also, by that time you're not drawing for Nation.
I didn't
so who was a break. Who was drawing?
I think I recommended a few names. I can't remember. And I also did the same in 2000.
When you went to
Vancouver Film School, and so it was the same thing, because I kind of felt, okay, I need to take a break and get some knowledge and learn more about animation, which is also I'm passionate about it. And
Are you planning to maybe do some animation in the future? Because so far you've just been able to.
Yeah, so I've actually always been. I've worked on very smaller projects since then.
Okay.
And worked with animators here. I've trained animators here. I have, and so forth. And of course, after I got back, I came, I produced the XYZ show.
Yeah, yeah.
And with at Buni Media.
Mm.
And so now I have taken, I've actually taken some sort of a sabbatical. I'm doing a project on a graphic novel.
XYZ, how did this come up? Is it something you always wanted to do and you're like, you know what? Let's use puppets. Let's not. How did this come up? XYZ.
Yeah, I thought of bringing editorial, cartoons on television, and so I thought, well, why not? And I was a big fan of the Spitting Image.
Yeah.
Which was the show that started it all in England
and
Le Guignol in France, and so I was fortunate enough to visit Le Guignol in Paris, and I got to meet a few people, and when I got back here, I managed to send to with the French embassy here, I managed to put a pilot.
Yeah.
I did a pilot, and then we spent probably about 7 years trying to get it done. Before we got it off the ground, by the way. And so finally we managed to get with my co-founder, Marie, Laura, we managed to get it together, and so we did And through Buni, we did, I think by the time we're done, about 15 seasons.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
Yeah, but the last three seasons, I haven't been really involved. I've been just involved in NENS. But I think we have, you know, other producers have come on board and to take on the matter and run with it. So,
because I hear those puppets were like part of the most expensive thing to do, yes? Like
yeah, they're the puppets very, well. Yeah, yeah. It's very expensive project. It's, you know, you need to build the puppets, you need to, you need a bigger team. You know, when we started, we had like 80 people working week in, week out. And then we, you know, reduced that when we became more efficient and we became about 50.
Oh.
And by the time, I think we stopped probably about 30 to 40, 30 to 40. Yeah, I mean, you have writers and puppeteers, voice talents, artists. You have, you know, cameramen. You have, you know, set builders. You have to build sets. You have to, and so it's a huge undertaking. And then you have to produce it week in, week out. It's not an easy one. So you really have to be on top of things.
According to you, which character's voice was the hardest to get? Because I have one in my mind, but I want to see which one. Because you are involved. Which character did you feel like? Which politician did you feel like this was hard to get someone to actually do it perfectly? Because of course. Raila was done perfectly, you know, but there was one where I felt like, hey,
Abba,
I'm a struggle. No, that's why I want to hear you your side.
No, probably our voice director, Kaemba, would know better about that. And but I think, for example, Uhuru was, didn't necessarily, but we, sometimes we don't get the voice. You end up actually, you end up characterizing the voice.
Yeah,
so you just get it to work for you.
Yeah.
It's not the voice, but it is. I think that's what we did with Uhuru. Okay. It's not like we
Because Ruto was perfect, of course.
Yeah. The rest were perfect. I mean, you know, Atwoli and others. And so, and it's always difficult because you have to get the, you have to get the, you see, you have, it's about three acts together to work together. The writers who are writing, the voice talents, and then the puppeteer. So all those have to get it right.
Yeah. Okay.
And so sometimes, you know, you miss, sometimes you get it right. But
Uhuru, I think even with TikTok, I've only found one person. I don't even remember who that has been able to do Uhuru's voice. I don't know. There's something about him that it's not unique. So it's really hard to do it because it's not unique. Because, you know, like Raila is unique. Ruto is unique. I don't know if there's that. Like right now, if Uhuru was speaking outside, yes, we'll know it's him, but it won't be. I don't know if that makes sense.
I think but I think you are probably right. I think with us it was kind of we struggled with the voice talents that was doing Uhuru for some. But what we did is we just got to, you know, characterize that voice.
Yes,
and then probably the important thing is also you get to have writers that are very good, you know, at writing that. I mean, that happens with also with even editorial cartoons.
Yeah,
so there are characters that actually, you know, over the years I've always struggled, to do.
Okay.
It's like you always struggle to do with, you know, with these particular characters and then, you know, so you end up just
characterizing
them and just use that as then it comes.
Yeah, you just go with that.
Then or you use certain elements, you know, so that becomes part of that. You don't draw them that well, but then that thing, you know.
Yeah, it still stands out.
It could be a rungu, it could be a golf stick, it could be a turban, and then that becomes.
And using Kef instead of Jeff Koinange, what was that intentional? Like, did you feel like it's you or?
No, I think it was, no, it wasn't that. I think we just needed a twist to it.
Okay.
And, you know, I think we were spoofing his voice. He knew, and I think I don't think, you know, he was kind enough to say, okay, that's okay. I don't think he, I mean, he did a couple of you know, the bench interviews with the XYZ guys. So
okay. And when I was checking, like, the newspapers you've worked with, there was Japan Times. Japan, how does this work?
Yes, no. So how what happens is that, you know, I've just, you know, those you know, newspapers that have published my work.
Yeah.
So it's not necessarily
that
so I've worked with. So what happens is that, you know, you would I would work with a syndicate organization. So one was based in the US, Cartoonists and Writers, which would basically send this our drawings. We send it to them, then they would send it to
other news, like worldwide.
These newspapers would pay them, and then actually, you know, you get a bit of that. So it's a very competitive and very difficult process. But yeah, from time to time, you would your cartoon would be published. Here and there, and then with, you know, particular publications. I mean, we still do that, but that's a bit different these days. With, you know, you have very few, have probably you know, it has been cut down to probably one publication or two, so to speak.
Oh, and Washington Times, do you remember, like, which one ended up there?
No, I think, you know, a couple probably. Not that many, by the way. Okay. It's a couple of drawings that I can't remember now that were published, yeah. Yeah, so those are the yeah.
Yeah, and there are people who are arguing that newspapers are on their deathbed. Do you feel the same? Like, because of technology? Technology has...
Not yet. I don't think on their deathbed, and I don't wish newspapers to be on their deathbed.
I know.
Because I think that they're still, even traditional media, I think they have a big role to play even today and in the future, because they have the structures also to do a lot of good journalism.
Yeah.
To do good journalism is not easy, and I think people always forget that. It's easy to get this instant stuff and laugh and memes and so forth, but to do good journalism where you have to investigate, you have to do things, and you have to interview people, it's a lot of work. And I think newspapers and other media houses, you know, have infrastructure rather structures, infrastructure, but also they also have the wherewithal to do that, the financial wherewithal to do that, and that is important. I think, of course, they have to restructure recalibrate to deal with these technological changes and things that are happening today. But I do believe that they still have an important role to play today in informing us, in educating us, and so forth.
Okay. Yeah. So in 2022, why decide to leave Standard?
Well, because I'm working on this project. That I'm working on. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. So that's the reason.
And then TMI with Ty, are there hopes of it coming back? What happened?
We hope so. We had a very good season, and Ty was fantastic. He's brilliant.
He's really good.
It's difficult, this kind of projects to produce, because you don't have it's there are projects that require good
investment.
You know, and so it has been difficult probably to get advertising and to get people on board. But we are still working on it. We are still pushing. And I think, definitely we would love to have TMI back. And it would be fantastic to have Ty on stage again.
Okay. And then talking, like, as we finish, I'd want to know, like, when it comes to some of the cartoons you've drawn, which one stand out to you as some of the most iconic? Because for me, one that I think I'll never forget, you captured it in such a good way, was where Kenya is a cow and the politicians are behind the cow. Like, that one was
that's a mean one. That's I did. I know the one.
Yeah.
Okay. That was very mean. Very mean of me.
No. It was so good. It captured. Captured what we all feel like in such a, you know, I don't know if, like, any day, if I wake up in Kenya, any day, and I put it on the wall, it shows me what's happening in Kenya at that moment, whether it's 1990 or it's 2024. You know.
So those are some of the things that editorial cartoonists, you know, cartoons can do. I mean, you can say things that actually probably, you know, print, you know, other, you know, rather other mediums cannot.
Yeah.
And I think those are some of the drawings I look back and I say, wait, did I do that? It was never published, I think.
It was just online. Yeah.
And, but, unfortunately, yeah, you're right. I think, you know, that's one notorious drawing that. But I have many drawings that actually, some of the drawings are not, you know, some of my favorite are not actual, you know, the favorites out there. But yeah, there are many. I think there's one I remember. I think the one I've seen also it being used on Ruto.
Yeah.
The one on Moi, when the Moi left the office, where I say the person appearing here. Is not required to transact the business.
I think that is
memorable in the sense, because of the, when I did it, I did just a day before. And my editor, I remember my editor said, okay, hold on this cartoon, we'll do it exactly the day of the inauguration. And so spot on. I think that's one, you know, but there are many more
Do you remember that day? Because I always say that it was such an iconic day. For him, he was 11 years old then, when Moi was exiting. But for us, it was like, this guy is actually going. And then people are chanting, Yote Yawezekana.
It was momentous. It was such a day. I mean, imagining. And I look back, I think also, you know, I remember it in the sense fondly, because you also, you know, it happened in a very peaceful way, and that is important, I think. We forget that.
It was really peaceful. And I feel like it made Kenya believe in democracy to a certain level. And I always say that democracy was this according to me, it was born in 2002, celebrated its birthday in 2005 referendum, and then died in 2007. And I feel like afterwards there's always been the thing of, has this person actually won the elections? It's never been the same since 2007. There's always that doubt. Even right now, as Gen Z fight, everyone is like, reconstitute IEBC, but please make sure the IEBC is not just friendly to Ruto. There's always going to be that thing hovering over IEBC. Do you feel the same? As because of course you've drawn all these characters, the Kivuitus and the Chebukatis.
I think I believe, and this is not my quote, I read this, I believe that democracy is always a work in progress. I think that's the reality of it. I think Kenya is the there's no other better place to explain that than Kenya. It's far from done, but it's good to see these momentous, you know, milestone now and then, and that always reaffirms that, you know, better days are ahead. So I think that is always something that is important. I think, as we have said, for example, there are things that Kenyans have fought for, you know, decades. It's only now it has appeared that you cannot take those things away. And one of the things, of course, is always to remain, to be eternally vigilant.
Yeah,
I think that's important. And if that's, you know, that we can't be reminded enough about that, because you can look, you know, just look at what is happening in the US, for example. Yeah. I mean, you know, even in the US, you know, democracy is being threatened.
Mm.
And so these are things that, you know, you have to remember, you have to, you know, to guard, you know, the gains that have been gained over the years ferociously. It's very important because they can't be wiped away by, you know, politicians and you know, people who take power.
Oh, okay. And then with the protest, there was this one drawing that you did, and you had the cop with a big gun, and then the young Gen Z girl with the phone.
Yeah.
But the cops, nene, your Kirauni, it had like a skull.
Yeah, that's...
If Ruto was to see this, what would you want him to understand it as? Because for me, the way I understood it was, you're basically saying these people are just out on the streets killing innocent people, like people who pose zero threat to them.
One of the thing about you know, editorial drawings is that they, and this one I've loved, they were, you know, they kind of, you do a drawing and they take their own persona.
Yes.
It's like they have their own interpretations. And I personally have always, you know, said that, look, I have the copyright to my drawings, but I don't have the copyright to the interpretations.
Okay.
Unfortunately, that happens. Much as I, you know, I would, as much as I would like to think. But what I just was demonstrating, or rather illustrating there, is the power of the fearlessness of the Gen Zs the boldness to say, look, we have our phones, and that is our, you know, our democratic right. That is what we would use against you. And so, you know, but you are right in the sense that, yeah, you can, you know, it is also, it shows you the authority that, you know, your power of the gun will not deter us, you know, from actually doing what we are doing. And so I had this young lady, you know, there. And interesting, I've been actually just developing this character, just doodling and drawing strange characters, rather small characters of this, you know, a few days ago, just putting together, you know, very small, you know, drawings. And when this idea, you know, hit me, it hit me very late that day in the evening. And I said, man, I got to finish this. So, but it was actually kind of, it doesn't have as many characters as whatever. So I actually decided, no, you know, I will finish this drawing. And I remember, I think I worked until 8 o'clock to get that done. I think I did probably, I do that in total for probably 2 hours until I finished in terms of scanning and, you know, and because I was excited about it, it felt for me iconic in the sense I was saying, you know, this is just a beautiful drawing, you know, so that you have a gun and I had a, you know, I kind of have a phone. And so I decided to do that, and then it ended up actually very much being used
online. I've also had people associate like this whole movement, that part of when it started bubbling under was the infamous. You remember that girl? I don't know if you remember her. She was called Mercy Tarus, the one who confronted the Mandagos for stealing their parents' money. And you remember she was there telling them, you people, the Finland scandal.
Finland? I remember that
girl. Yeah, you remember the girl?
Yeah,
who stood up to them. So for that to happen and then for this to happen, people are only hoping for bigger things. Like right now, we are making people more accountable than they were in the past.
I would like to think it started much earlier. I think if you pay attention, you would just see that it started much earlier than that. You know, it started way back, way before that. I think there were a lot of issues that a lot of young people were raising, about, you know, the discontent and all that. But also you had the political class answering back and insulting them and
dismissing
them and so forth. And I think that has been also a bigger a bigger part of the problem.
Mm.
Is that it is just, it's not the corruption, and it's not the the dissatisfaction and the financial, but
bad
it is,
governance.
It is also, you know, the
political attitude.
The political attitudes, the political class, you know, rubbing it, off, onto
dismissing people.
Yes, dismissing, these kids who have actually, they are, lots of them are very fair in their arguments. They are saying, okay, we don't have jobs. We have worked. We have, but if you are to look, this with this administration, what they've been actually doing and what they've been, saying, it's actually completely, the opposite. And so, and so, I think I would like to think it was, okay. Probably, It was
much earlier.
Yeah, it goes much earlier than that.
And this apologetic tone, do you believe it when we have the Aaron Cheruiyot coming out like, oh, we are sorry, we know
you.
No, these
are politicians. You have to take their words with a pinch of salt. These are people who would say anything to these are people who would, politicians are, should not be trusted.
For that.
They should always be interrogated. So. Yes, it is good now they have seen some sense into it, but I don't think we should take their words for it.
No.
As you say, these are the same people who voted the bill, and the very next day they were clapping. I mean, how is that?
They are clowns.
So it's important that people remain vigilant in terms of what they're saying.
Okay. So kile tunasema tu ni asante sana. This has been like a very good journey. Like one of the most surprising things that I've heard from you is you saying that you felt like Moi and Kibaki had thicker skin than Uhuru and Ruto. I always felt maybe the opposite, because these ones were old school, so they'd be like, but you're the one with the pen,
well, things that were happening. I mean, in the background. That is
no. That's why it's interesting. Okay. It's a very interesting insight. So Mekoni, episode 327.
Yeah.
So vile sui usamaga kama kawaida, like, subscribe, hit the notification button, tell a friend to tell a friend. Tukimalizia 327 tukisema ekonene.